This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharad Abdullah and Wang Xiaoning. It is 7.06 in the morning, Friday the 13th of September. And overnight, stocks eked out again on optimism about the outlook for a trade agreement between the US and China after Europe's central bank announced a fresh round of stimulus.
So the ECB wants to cut its main rate to minus 0.5% and buy 20 billion euros of worth, which is $22 billion of bonds a month. So S&P closed up 0.3%, just 0.5 below its all-time high. Dow Jones closed up 0.2% and Nasdaq closed up 0.3%.
Meanwhile, any steps by China and the US to ease tensions ahead of face-to-face talks in Washington in the coming weeks clearly helped boost market and also would support sentiment as investors await monetary decisions from more of the world's major central banks. Now, the Feds are due to meet next week as economic indicators give a mixed signals about whether the record long expansion will end soon. Meanwhile, over in Asia, markets were kind of mixed. Hang Seng was down 0.3. Straits Times was also down a similar number. And the KLCI was just down 0.1%. Although there was a little bit of cheering up in Shanghai, Nikkei and Korean markets though.
So for more insight into global markets this morning, we speak to Tim Mulholland, president of TJM Limited in Chicago. Thank you for joining us, Tim. Now, China has announced a range of goods that will be exempted from 25% extra tariffs put in place last year. But notably, charges on major items like soybeans and pork still remain. So is this Beijing offering the U.S. an olive branch, but still maybe keeping something in reserve?
Yeah, I think it's an olive branch as well as Trump's delay of the tariffs that are supposed to go into effect October 1st. So I think it's kind of relative to that. But, you know, it's also interesting because China was looking at or seeking bids today for U.S. grains and also pork. So I think that it is certainly an olive branch. I think it's a overture. I think it's a good negotiating stance where I think both sides hopefully are going to come and have face saving for both sides in this and hopefully get a resolution, you know, to this trade war that's been kind of overhanging the global markets for the last year.
And Tim, China's also set to introduce moves to mitigate the impact of the trade war. What kind of measures do you expect to see out of Beijing?
You know, certainly not more debt, but I, you know, because they've got, you know, they've been trying to delever here. But, you know, I think the cut in the triple R requirement, I think, has been one that, and they've taken measures to lend to small private businesses or encouraging banks to lend to small private businesses, which has, you know, really been, I think, to me, the real debilitating factor in their economy. So one thing I don't see is more debt. You will see some infrastructure spending. I'm certain of that. But I really think that they're looking at trying to do this without, you know, without increasing their debt ratios more than, you know, already intolerable levels.
And Hong Kong Stock Exchange has offered to buy a London Stock Exchange. So what do you make of the timing of the offer? And what are the factors that would support such a merger?
Well, let's see, the $32 billion bid, euro bid, pound bid rather, for that, for the exchange, sorry. You know, it's kind of interesting. You know, the LME purchased by Hong Kong was very successful. This one caught people by surprise just because, you know, Hong Kong is, you know, as we all know, hasn't been a pretty sight as far as, you know, business environment in the last several months. So I think that it's going to cause pause by the LSE, and I also think you're probably going to see some competitive bid here, maybe from ICE as well, coming into the equation here. But to me, it seems, sounds to me like it's going to be a far fetch here for, given the current situation, I think, for this deal to really succeed, at least in my opinion. And that's given the fact that, you know, Hong Kong is actually probably the greatest risk that I can remember it being as losing its significance in the global financial markets, as hard as it may seem to believe.
And Tim, now oil slumped as OPEC and its allies urged members to adhere to pledged production cuts. Since its April peak, Brent crude oil has fallen some 19% despite tension in the Middle East. What do you think has been behind this fall?
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, I think really what we have to look at is the West Texas Brent spread and the increase in outtake capacity from the Gulf Permian Basin and into the Gulf, I think, has been a big factor because more U.S. supplies are accessible or by the global markets, and I think that's been narrowing the spread. That spread about a year ago was about $10 and now and came into about $3. I think it's around $5 or so now. But I think with that narrowing of the spread, I think, tells the entire picture. There's more West Texas crude coming out to the market given the outtake capacity increase in the U.S., and I think that's been the driving factor there.
Thank you so much, Tim. And that was Tim Mulholland of TJM Limited out of Chicago, talking to us about oil as well as China's stimulus measures, potential stimulus measures, as well as the move by the Hong Kong Exchange to offer to buy the London Stock Exchange. Now, speaking of HKX, Hong Kong Exchanges and Clearings made this unexpected $36.6 billion bid for the LSE. And part of the bid is that the UK bourse will have to scrap its acquisition of data provider Refinitiv. Now, this was a takeover aimed at pushing into the financial sector. Refinitiv is the former financial and risk unit of Thomson Reuters. But LSE's board has said that they remain committed to the acquisition of Refinitiv.
Yeah, and they also highlighted the hurdles facing an offer that is that it called unsolicited, preliminary, as well as highly conditional. So this is a decision from the board, and it said that it would consider the proposal and make further announcement later. LSE executive and investors could also see the $27 billion takeover of Refinitiv as a more secure future than a sort of multi-continental combination of stock exchange operators mentioned just now. I mean, the situation back in London as well as in Hong Kong is not, I guess, not the most positive.
I think the other reason why stock exchanges like LSE are looking towards acquiring a company like Refinitiv is because stock volumes, right, which is the driver of most stock exchange earnings, have been on the downside. And it's extremely volatile because if markets are bad, then volumes just come off. So there's this push towards basically deriving your income from data rather than stock volumes. I mean, you just have to look at how well Bloomberg is doing, how much profit they make, right? So regardless of where markets are, Bloomberg continues to do really well because everyone is so dependent on this data that it requires. So London Stock Exchange sees that potential and knows
the symbiotic
that,
relationship as well, right?
So go into data rather than just depend on volume. So I don't know whether from a Hong Kong Stock Exchange, they kind of think, oh, you know, we want to be this dominant Asian European stock exchange. But for me, I think the money is really in terms of AI data providing for financial companies rather than volumes.
Yeah, but I think also the other downside to this Hong Kong offer is, you know, like what Tim said, you know, Hong Kong at this point in time is at risk of losing its status as a global financial hub. And I can imagine from the perspective of the LSE as well, the Hong Kong deal would be something to hesitate over just because also of the questions over Beijing's role in Hong Kong's affairs, because the Hong Kong government owns 6% of HKX and appoints 6 out of the company's 13 board members. Hong Kong's chief executive appoints the company's chairman, which Hong Kong chief executive is themselves appointed by Beijing. So it's a very much it would very much seem as if LSE would be opening the doors to Chinese control of the company if they were to accept the bid.
So why is this a mutually exclusive sort of arrangement? Why is it that a London LSE could not go ahead with the acquisition of Refinitiv at the same time this sort of merger would, and at the same time going ahead with this merger? Because it sounds like, I mean, like you said, I mean, it helps when LSE were to transform itself to a more data-driven entity. And I guess with the merger, I mean, Hong Kong could also benefit from it.
I think it's just a condition of the Hong Kong bid at this point that they have to drop the potential deal with Refinitiv. Who knows what kind of rationale was behind that. But speaking of Hong Kong, also according to Bloomberg sources, Anheuser-Busch InBev, or AB InBev, is aiming to raise about $5 billion in a Hong Kong listing of its Asian unit by the end of September. And this is actually a plan scrapped 2 months ago that appears to be reviving for what would have been the world's biggest IPO of 2019.
Yeah, so that wasn't that long ago, 2 months. And now again, they're gauging investors' demand and will apparently launch the deal as soon as next week. So yesterday, the company said that they're resuming their listing application, which involves minority stake in the Budweiser Brewing Company, APEC without its Australian operation, and which they agreed to sell to Asahi Group for about $11.3 billion shortly after shelving the IPO 2 months ago.
Now, the removal of AB InBev's Australian unit potentially makes the latest IPO plan more attractive to investors who actually balked at the previous deal's valuations. Without Australia, the Asian's unit revenue in 2018 was $6.7 billion, which represented an organic growth of 7.4%. Now, if it had included Australia, it had revenue of $8.5 billion, representing only organic growth of 6.1%. Now, this listing would be a boost to the Hong Kong boss, which it desperately needs, because it's been a relatively quiet season for them in terms of capital market activities. The market has also been roiled by US-China trade war and ongoing anti-government protests, which have occasionally flared into violence.
Yeah, but I think the thing that's interesting about this move by AB InBev to refile is that it's happening really much sooner than anyone expected, only 2 months after the initial plan was shelved. And it could be part of their plan to try and cut their $100 billion-plus dollar debt pile after their acquisition of SAB Miller in 2016. And it could be there's some speculation also among analysts that potentially that AB InBev are looking to take advantage of high beer valuations right now in China, or maybe they even have an M&A deal waiting in the wings that they would need a listing in order to pull off. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how this turns out. But there's also been some other IPO news recently, particularly a very large one in the form of Saudi Aramco, because according to Bloomberg sources, Saudi Aramco is considering a structure for its IPO that would prevent it from marketing the deal directly to fund managers in the US.
Now, the state-owned oil giant wants to avoid litigation risks that could result from selling the deal to US-based institutions. Now, apparently, Aramco is talking to bankers on the pros and cons of different deal structures. And this hasn't actually, there's been no final decision. Because many foreign IPOs rely on Rule 144A structure, which allows overseas companies to make market offerings to institutional investors in the US. Now, the method that Aramco is considering is Regulation S, which will basically mean limiting the selling of stocks to foreign buyers and overseas units of only the US fund houses. Now, the issue I have with this is because it's one of going to be the world's largest IPO and you're cutting off US funds, how receptive would this IPO then be? Because, I mean, okay, some of the big houses like the likes of Fidelity, Templeton Capital have, of course, foreign entities or foreign subsidiaries, so they can participate. But the US-only based funds, they'll be locked out of this deal.
Yeah, and this is, we're talking about a market that is one of the best performing around the world as well at this stage.
Well, I don't think it's so much about the markets because it's not about where Aramco is listing. But if you're a US-based fund and you're talking about at the end of the day, most of the fund houses are US, the big global ones are, right? That would just mean that you are limiting the pool of potential buyers. And if you're the biggest IPO, that doesn't kind of make any sense in capital markets, right?
Yes, because your valuations, you're looking at a $2 trillion valuation. So you're going to need all the help you can get in order to reach that. So you're limiting your pool of buyers right
now. Yeah, you need as much demand as possible so that you can price this IPO as best as possible. And if you cut out all the US funds, how much upside are you going to get?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think all this is coming because there's a lot of, I guess, interest with regards to where the IPO is going to be. I mean, every single major stock market exchange are going to Aramco and wanting them to basically list on their market. And I think support with choices.
So Aramco is apparently choosing as many as 9 joint global coordinators, including some Middle Eastern banks. And there are discussions currently being held for anchor investors in the offering.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.